too many Tic Tacs in the town.
That's crushed.
Wow, those teeth. They're gorgeous.
Yeet. What's a yeet?
Yeet.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3:38 starting time. Please welcome from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Matthew Wiley. Play away, please.
Golf Lady 134. That's Alt J. I've used that song before. Golflandia now on Stitcher. Of course, we're on Spotify, Casts, iTunes Podcasts. One of those two. And of course, if you're not on Twitter, you should be. It is the world's comment section. If your business idea sucks, Twitter will let you know. And that's a good thing. That's called transparency.org. But you can follow me there at, for full transparency, you can follow me on Twitter at Wiley77. Is that AlexPatrick94? Made sure to tell everyone that I need to be more transparent. At Golflandia. Or my burner account at Jabbar_financing_Saudi Arabia. I just swallowed something from this Dasani sparkling water can, which I have about 30 a day of. And something was floating in it that I swallowed, and I just hope it's not a fingernail. From one of the fine employees at the Coca-Cola Company, Atlanta, Georgia. That would be a tough scene. Or something else worse. DraftKings contest is up. 400 people every week. We're going to make it bigger. Single entry, $5. No rake. Big deal. That's a big deal. Guaranteed money. So if one of you joins, you automatically win. If two of us join, me and you, you automatically win. Because I am ass at actually choosing a team on fantasysports.com. I always look over my shoulder. I said this on Twitter, and I just did it again. It's 12:35 a.m. Eastern time. And I always, and Ryan, who works for me, echoed the same sentiment when he was here late at night. There's some sort of phantom or spirit in this office, and it's always over my right shoulder. Mocking me. Maybe it's the pizza delivery guy that delivered pizza to us on what? Thursday? Wednesday night? We were here late. And then 3 hours later at like 12:30, he FaceTimed me. What the hell, man? So we ended up watching Frozen 2 together. I'm just kidding. That was for putt sweat. This week was the WGC, and it was, I thought that and the opposite field tournament in Puerto Rico, sadly, Josh Teeter lost. Very sadly. Not because he defeated himself, but Hovland had all the momentum going for him. If it were any other scenario, if we had been willing Hovland to win, do you think he would have ever made that eagle chip in and that 70-mile-an-hour putt that should have gone past the hole 300 feet? Do you think that would ever drop if we needed him to win? No. Has that ever happened for us? Never. Look at Keith Mitchell last year, Honda Classic. Were any of us on him that aren't lying? No. It was Glover, Vijay Singh, Wyndham Clark, Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka. And then Killer Keith Mitchell. Not Killa. That's a terrible name. It's Killer with an R, not A-H, R. Hits it in the bunker on the par five. Not a great approach. Lands on the green about, what, 300 feet from the hole. Buries it. Birdie. Game over. I love the Honda Classic, though, because it's a tough course, and it really challenges these players. This week was some controversy in two regards. By the way, congrats on everyone owning golf. The PGL made its first tweet, and they said, "We own golf." So congrats. If that's the case, please buy out my shares. But the PGA app, it was a disaster. The app that we rely on every week to navigate our lives. All the children's birthdays, parties, why can I not pluralize words properly today? I've tried to limit my sweetener intake, but maybe there's just something wrong with me. You maybe have a few good episodes left and then I'm done. But I don't even know what I was talking about. Oh yeah, the app that we rely on every week that has basically become the thing that we've missed children's birthday parties for because we're so addicted to looking at Shot Tracker, not three screens deep, the gray box underneath the player's score. Because we have, what, 6, 10, 12, 14 players, 140 players we're following, and we just have to know where on the course they are without clicking in once or twice. And I get the PGA Tour app is trying to evolve. They don't make these decisions just flippantly, like on a Tuesday. Let's change the app. These giant organizations, I know how they work. There's a lot of process involved, approval levels, and there is a strategy in play here. This isn't change one of one. This is change one of 10 or more. But this one objectively missed the mark. Because, and I know what they're trying to get to, they want more click-throughs for ad revenue, obviously. That's one of the things. But this element of the app is so consequential to this industry, both in fantasy and betting. It's really everything, and I genuinely miss it. And so I had two separate conversations that morning. Not that it's anything meaningful when I talk to someone, but I, you know, the general tone of the conversation was, because we talked previously and I was complimentary of some changes, should you need any advice, here is what I'm thinking. And I broke down the reasons why this is problematic and why they're going to be facing a shitstorm about this that day. And a lot of these organizations, not the PGA, but a lot of these organizations, they're just gigantic, right? And they don't take a lot of risk with change in their business product because they don't need to, especially the ones that are pretty monopolistic. PGA is a very monopolistic industry because you can't, or business line, because you can't find PGA golf anywhere else. Oh, I'm sorry, the PGL. Coming soon. And so, you know, remarkable change is not something that's necessary, unlike a small business that has to be pretty flexible on a day-to-day basis, that has to make decisions about cash flow every day, or personnel, or client service. These larger organizations are just whales. And, you know, oftentimes, not specifying an industry or a company, but it's just about, you know, self-preservation, not taking too much risk, climbing the corporate ladder, and making sure that you know, if something's successful, you can assign some credit to yourself. Or if it's shitty, you blame Rob in finance. But in this day and age where, like, listen, 30 years ago, the complaint section for these big companies was a comment card that you mailed in that they instantly put in an incinerator. It didn't matter, right? So anything these companies did years ago was always fantastic. They never did anything wrong because they didn't hear the voices of their consumers. Number one, they own the industry. Number two, no one said shit. We're great. Just listen to us. Fig Jam. Is it Fig Jam? Fuck, I'm great. Just ask me. Yes. But in this day and age, Twitter is a living, breathing comment section for your product, for everything, for politics, for sports picks. And should your product that we know and love, PGA Tour app, should it not meet the standards of what we expect, knowing that how much we rely on it week to week, that company is going to be let that be known. And so there's a larger amount of transparency now because consumers have a lot larger advocacy than they did in the past. And the employees of that company, the players, also can leverage these consumers as well. It's almost like a union. Well, I'll just take the players with me to the PGL. Sorry, the players say, I'll just take the fans with me to the PGL. But in this day and age, as a result, you can't have a company that's just the 1,000-pound gorilla, and I'm borrowing this from someone's content. I can't remember who. But they made a good point that you can't just be the 1,000-pound gorilla shoving, you know, app updates or content or products down a consumer's throat anymore because they have such a voice. They have to be much more engaged in the products they consume or the contents they consume in 2020. The result was that the PGA Tour, Scott, who's the VP of operations, responded very well. And they listened, and they are listening, and they want to make it better. Clearly, that's a big part of leadership is how you react. And I know from personally that both from a user standpoint of the app and a content standpoint from live television, both on network and the PGA's role in the future production of television, that's something they want to tailor to what people who are watching are demanding in this day and age. And at a minimum, they're listening and being good stewards of their product by reacting to what the things they're hearing on Twitter, etc., the life's comment section, and making not just saying, you know what, fuck you, we're the PGA, we'll do what we want. We want to change the app, fuck it. I don't care what you say. It's our app. Or I don't care that you don't like the broadcast. We're never going to change. They will. They want to. All networks do. They hear all the noise. But I think that that's where the PGL thought there were some inroads into some disenchantment with both the employees of the PGA, the players, the elite players, let's just say, a group of them, and then ultimately the fans, because the fans weren't getting the TV product they wanted. But those are easily fixable items. Right? I mean, the TV product will get fixed. It's already changing now. In a week, I felt it was demonstrably better. But give it a year or so, especially with the integration of gaming and betting and fantasy, and then more cameras on the course and everything that the PGA networks want to do, and we'll forget these conversations altogether. But you don't just jump to a new league because you're frustrated with how TV is portraying live golf right now. Why is the PGL going to make it any different or better? I mean, these issues will get fixed. If your kids don't eat their vegetables, you don't give your children away to your neighbor. Although sometimes you want to. But looking at the PGL, what do they have? They've got money. They've got the prospect. I heard a podcast with the CEO. They've got they talk about having the best players in the world, but who, as of right now, the player count for the PGL, what's their player count right now? Currently it's zero under my count. Unless I'm missing something. I'm looking around the room looking for affirmation of that comment. The ghost says zero? Yeah, okay, cool. Pizza guy? Zero? Yep. They say the prospects of having the best players in the world, and then they have what? More golf. So they've got those three things. Oh, and then I guess you could say more golf with a twist. But you look at the money part of this. The PGA has a lot of money too. And they've got a lot of history, and they've got a lot of power. And they've got the American audience. And they've also got the brand that really validates and authenticates stardom in golf. I mean, the PGL can pick off some Korn Ferry players, some European Tour players, maybe even a few PGA players, young players who don't even go to the PGA, possibly. But until you do the circuit on the PGA Tour, you cannot become, you're not a star. It is the absolute validation for whether or not you're one of the elite golfers in the world. In my opinion. Then you go, and that's the money side of things. I mean, the PGA's got a lot of power. Sure, the PGL is going to have a lot of money. Is that going to make it a viable entity? In my opinion, no. Because you know what? $10 million a week in prize money is really expensive when you've got Bernd Wiesberger and Patrick Reed competing. If that is your, not that Patrick Reed, I mean, he's a star, but you need 48 of those. And then the best players, speaking of that, who? If it's going to be a Reed, a Phil, a Bernd, not that any of those players have committed or even thought about committing to the PGL. I'm just using them as a reference point. Traveling around the world playing golf? We've got that. It's called the European Tour. And no one watches that at night except for me and a handful of others. So the solution to the PGL is providing with having the best players in the world questionable. They've got zero currently. What are they bringing overall? More golf. There are 20 tours that I can count probably in my head right now. More golf is not something consumers are demanding. If it were so, then all the other tours would be a problem for the PGA Tour taking away eyeballs. It's not. It's complementary. Why? Because the PGA, much like the NHL versus the AHL, much like the NFL versus the XFL, much like the Major League Baseball versus minor leagues, is just the absolute top-tier talent tour in the world. And whether one or two or three players leave and go to the PGL, which I think is questionable at best, it won't change that. More golf is not in demand by fans. If you think about it with the, and you can't compare it, if you think about it, with the rise of, let's say, UFC. That was an entirely new sport to compete with traditional boxing. It's like what Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch thinks about from a competition standpoint. If someone puts Bud Light beer that tastes exactly like Bud Light, charges more money in a bottle, is that going to be a concern for Anheuser-Busch? No. What's a concern? Well, the landscape of leisure, as I've always talked about. Pot. Not drinking beer. So if you invent a new sport that's entirely different from golf that people want because they're tired of golf, which they're not, let's call it grolf, then that is a problem for the PGA because the PGA doesn't have that. But if it's going to be golf to golf, it's virtually untouchable. And the comparison made on the podcast by the founder was that it's going to be the twist that I talked about was that it's going to be more of a F1 racing tennis model where you can follow teams and players and root for them in a different, it's still golf, but in a different format of golf. The difference between golf, PGA Tour golf, and any other sport on earth, baseball, hockey, tennis, football, is that unlike those sports where the competition is against another person, team versus team, root for someone, in golf, the competition is, you can root for more than one person on a field in golf than just one team or one player. In fact, it's more so the player against the course and the player versus themselves. Do you think there was satisfaction in Victor Hovland defeating Josh Teeter? Do you think there was satisfaction in Josh Teeter finishing second? Was that the outcome that gave us pleasure? No. It is players defeating, is getting through the course mentally over 4 days. It is defeating the course and becoming part of history for that tournament, which has, 70, 80 years of history. And having that relatability to us, because we're never going to drive Formula One cars, but we play golf every weekend, and understanding how difficult it is to improve, to get better, and to shoot your lowest scores. And that's the difference. And tradition is such a huge part of golf. I don't see fans saying, listen, I wish I could just find a different twist on golf because this is so boring. I think golf is not even close to its peak yet. And the final nail in the coffin for me on the PGL, the last I'll ever speak of it, is Jay Monahan, right? What did he say? It's us, meaning it's the PGA Tour or them. You cannot straddle. Either you're playing on this tour or you're not. So some of these players, like Rory, already said, because I believe the mandate is make a decision for 2022 now, is that's not for me. A week ago, he was like, yeah, it's a really cool concept. I can really vibe with it. And then 5 days later, I'm out. It's almost as if, I don't know, Jay Monahan sent an email out. He's pretty clear on it. You probably don't want to mess with that guy. And I'm not sure the inner politics between elite players and the tour. I'm sure there's some things that they want. Perhaps less events, perhaps more appearance fees, something. But that'll get worked out, I'm sure. But they're not going to sabotage the entire... No one is going to leave the PGA Tour, in my opinion, for Saudi money and potentially hurt the tour and the game that we love and think that fans are going to follow them and say, yeah, I'm totally behind that. The PGA Tour is dead. I always wanted something new. And how is something new automatically going to do something better? You know the resources infrastructure that the PGA has in the history of doing this? How is some startup league with no players and just some cash and one individual spearheading it going to be any better? It doesn't work that way in startups. I know. But you're not going to have sponsorship exemptions getting around it and saying, well, even though Jay Monahan doesn't want it said us or them, we can still invite Brooks Koepka if he goes to the PGL to this event. No, you can't. The sponsors do not choose the exemptions. It is the tour executives, the people, independent contractors running the tour event in conjunction with PGA criteria. And if you don't want your ass handed to you as a PGA Tour organizer, and if you go around Jay Monahan's wishes and start inviting players who are in the PGL, good luck ever running another tour event. I promise you. I have seen that math before. Someone carries a big stick. And so they should. They're trying to protect their brand. And I think it's a great statement. It's either us or them. I don't think you're being, you know, too outlandish saying that. But they've got to protect their brand. If they allowed both tours to happen, you're basically financing the PGL to succeed. But these sponsors can't, you know, if Jay Monahan says us or them, no PGL players in the PGA Tour, from what I understand, that's the law. Charles Schwab can't invite O.J. Simpson to a PGA Tour event unless the PGA Tour says it's cool. It's handicap and age. Tony Romo, very much good with everyone. He can play golf. He's got a good handicap. He's good for the tour. Fully endorsed. But overall, the PGA Tour, the networks, understand that they can't be this 1,000-pound gorilla to shoving things down the consumer's throat. They understand that the viewers, us, the gaming industry, bettors, why do you think they partner with DraftKings? They understand that we have some clout. And for the future of the product to be sustainable, and to make sure that viewers don't jump ship to another tour, they have to understand and listen to what we're asking for and accommodate it. It doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight. It doesn't mean it's going to be perfectly right tomorrow. That's just not how things work. I mean, it takes 12 months to get a lot of simple decisions done because these brands are gigantic. They move slowly. You cannot be too disruptive. That's it. Our DK winner today is Ben Eccles. I think it's Ben Eccles. Is that right? Yeah. He's from Nashville. All right. The winner of last week is Luke Eccles, now from Nashville, Tennessee. What's up, man?
Hi, Matthew. Thank you for having me on. I'm still here basking in my glow of my first place on the Golflandia DraftKings, so appreciate the invite.
It's pouring rain in the South, isn't it?
Yes, we've had constant rain for about a month. It's even snowed on and off a few times, so definitely ready for spring, ready for golf weather.
You worked in my notes here that we were talking about before we started recording, you worked for Tesla.
Yeah, Tesla was an amazing experience. I worked at the delivery hub in Fremont, California. So it was about 2 miles from the factory. So we were in the thick of things. We had a lot of movement. We had delivered 1,000 cars December 31st. Of 2019. So very memorable moments with that company for sure.
And now you're in Nashville. It's a good town.
Nashville. We love Nashville. All the country music is just unbelievable. You know, we're ready to get into some golfing. The, you know, golf here is amazing. And, you know, with the rain and snow, it just hasn't quite been the weather for it.
Since you're a DFS pro, what are you looking at this week at the Honda? Have you given any thought yet, sir?
Yes, I try to look ahead, you know, with all the different, you know, available resources. I like to kind of have my initial thoughts similar to how you do. That's one of the things I appreciate.
you think I have initial thoughts?
Well, I mean, you always, you know, do some upfront, you know, Twitter posts and stuff on your initial thoughts and say, hey, remind me of this come Wednesday. And I'm
kind why of am I such a fish in DFS, though? Tell me that, Luke.
Well, I tell you, it's easy to get swayed in DFS. I mean, especially with the favorites, you know, sometimes being too obvious, I feel like it's easy to look past some of the underdogs, I guess.
Who do you like this week? I'm taking notes. Go.
Well, some of the guys I really like this week, I like Lucas Glover. I think his course history fits. And, you know, he's been playing relatively well. I think, you know, if he kind of misses the cut, I think when he goes home, he hears it from his wife. So there's some extra motivation for Lucas. I also like Russell Henley. You know, Russell's kind of been off the map for a little while, but I feel like he played pretty good at the Genesis Open. Looked really good putting. So he's got the course history here at the Honda Classic. So I feel good about him this week. Rory Sabatini, he's got the course history, and he's been playing solid for well over a year now. You know, some of the favorites, I like, you know, I think Ricky is hungry for a win. It's been over a year since Ricky's won last. I know he's kind of went through some swing changes here and there in the off season, but, you know, after the first round at the Waste Management, he really picked it up. And I think I'm hoping that, you know, maybe he was in Florida here at PGA National practicing beforehand. So I think he's ready to roll this week. Louis Oosthuizen, I mean, he's got the course history as well. And, you know, when you look at DFS points, he's at the top of the list, you know, with birdies and eagles and such. So I'm looking for a good week from Ricky. Some of the kind of under the radar guys that I do like, Denny McCarthy. You know, this is a tough course. You got to hit fairways and you got to hit greens, and he's a cut maker. Patrick Rogers. I was really on Patrick Rogers the last couple weeks, and he's been pretty good, but he's kind of, you know, missed top tens. But he's got some course history here, and I think he's itching for a win as well.
I just wanted to be on record that you said you called him Ricky Oosthuizen.
Well, you know, I kind of had Ricky and Louis there both at the tip of my tongue. So
you can go in the front of the podcast now.
Yeah.
Those are the slip ups that we like to have in the bumpers of the show.
Yeah. You know how it goes. You get tongue tied every once in a while.
It's okay. I was going to tell you, I think you're one of the nicest sounding people I've ever talked to in my life. Well, you sound like a really, really nice person. And I say that coming from me, who's abrasive and harsh and sometimes just downright mean. You just sound like someone I could just sit and talk to all day.
Yeah, man. I'm happy to come on the
podcast. Are you a friendly person? Do you like smile all the time?
I'm smiling right now, for sure.
Damn it. I knew it. You're such a you are so lucky. That positive mental attitude.
I did win $400 last week on your DraftKings contest, so that helped put a smile on my face.
Ricky Oosthuizen, that's going to live in pot. I'm going to put this in my notes for a future T-shirt I'm going to wear on the show.
It's the two for one.
It's Ricky Oosthuizen.
Yeah.
And people are going to start talking about it on Twitter tomorrow. It's okay. Good. And those are genuine. Like, some people just try to get me with them so I repeat them. That was natural. It was like JT Pastone when someone said that in the podcast, you know, podcast number one or two.
You know what? You say that, and I've got him all over my notes.
How do you say his name?
JT Pastone.
So close.
Poston?
That's good. Yes, it's Poston.
Yeah, Poston. But I think his short game is the equalizer for him. And, you know, if he can put the ball in the fairway with his short game, chipping and putting, I think he could be right up there. Top 10, top five this week.
Luke, I hope you win every week. Your positive energy is infectious. I can feel it through the microphone.
Cool. Yeah, happy to hear that.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
No, thank you for having me on, Matthew. Good follow. All right, pal. Keep up the good content, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Cash rules everything around me.
Cream, get the money. Tiger Woods, y'all.
All right, Ryan. Good evening.
How you doing, man?
Last week, the WGC. Well, I kind of think outside of Barbasol and British Open, this WGC Puerto Rico opposite field is one of my favorite weeks. I don't know if you agree.
No, it was an incredible watch. And I mean, obviously, it was nice to see Josh Teeter play so well. But they were on at the same time. And I was firmly watching Puerto Rico and not at all watching the WGC until that ended. It's a field of, I mean, really talented players and guys who need that sort of event to make their mark. And I think you saw it at the end, you know, what it means to a guy like Josh Teeter to have that opportunity and then, you know, 20 years later, and then to have that opportunity taken away from him on a ridiculous putt by Hovland. It was painful to watch.
The one thing that concerns me on the WGC side with elite talent is Rory's putting is, I mean, he's elite at everything in golf. Putting, average to maybe below average. It is troubling watching him putt.
Yeah, and I think it was strange because he has been putting really well over the last year, year and a half or so.
Not now.
No, there was something off. But look, bumpy Poa greens, you never know how they're going to react. And it gets exposed at a place like that when guys are making, you know, 8, 9, 10 birdies around. You have to go low and you have to putt well. I am not sold on that golf course. I heard a lot of people and I saw a lot of people tweeting about how it's one of their favorite events and it's a fun venue to watch, but I don't know. I mean, there are 4 drivable holes. These guys are hitting, you know, 8 irons and 7 irons into par 5s. I don't know. That course doesn't do it for me.
It's an unusual course, and I think it was darkened by the fact that it was a Reed Bryson 1-2 finish, and then Darth Hovland beat Teeter with 2 of the most luck boxy shots in the history of golf. The eagle chip in, which should have been a bogey, and the putt that should have gone 40 feet past the hole.
Yeah. That eagle chip in, especially after what he did on 11, where he chunked 2 chips and sculled 1 and made triple bogey. And yeah, that was painful to watch. I mean, those shots Teeter hit in the pouring rain on 16, 17, 18. I mean, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, and he's playing the Honda this week. And he's been working with a putting coach, as you can tell, because he was draining a lot of big putts. He really didn't beat himself, which makes me feel better. Because if he had choked down the stretch, I thought, you know, that just, I feel worse for him. It was just Victor. So, deport the kid.
Yeah.
This week is the Honda, which is your event, man. Are you excited? You pumped?
Yes, it's been a crazy few months. Kind of glad it's here, but very much looking forward to it, both our event and the Honda, which is a complete shit show in itself. Wide open field, weak field, brutal course, windy conditions. I think it was Mike Miller tweeted something where like 5 of the last 7 winners have been 200-1 or more.
My notes for this event, and I agree, it's very firm and fast. There's treachery everywhere, particularly on the back 9. A ton of water, 70-plus bunkers. Single-digit winning scores, which is usually an annual thing here, is indicative of course toughness. And course toughness, the prerequisite, like in a U.S. Open, is iron play and scrambling and wedge play and good putting and firm greens. So you must be dialed in. And if you look back historically at stats of people who've done well here, much like any other course, but this one in particular, it's approach. You must be dialed in with irons into fast greens. Bogey avoidance, especially. That's why a lot of these guys at high prices hang in there, because you don't necessarily need 40 birdies over the course of 4 days. Mm-hmm. You just need to avoid catastrophic mistakes. And so you have veterans like Vijay Singh, who was a couple of bogeys away on the final nine on Sunday last year from actually going to playoff or perhaps winning. Lee Westwood, Patrick Harrington, Jim Furyk. Guys who can plot their way around a golf course and understand how to play positionally and not now, ironically, Vijay Singh put himself with a bogey on 17 last year, right in the thick of things. I know that because we had money on him.
Yes.
And Fowler. And Keith Mitchell drained that putt at the end and everyone was excited. Except us. But the wind plays a huge factor. I found in my notes that a good tee time draw will benefit some. I guess my thought process was to avoid wind in the afternoon. First time winners, a thing, because like I said, players hang around. You have Michael Thompson. I don't think maybe this wasn't Russell Henley's first win. It was Keith Mitchell's, definitely. Mm-hmm. But most all winners are solid iron players with Bermuda pedigree. And also, finally, Wyndham Clark is the man. Anything else?
Yeah, that was good. Last year's event, which you just referenced, was kind of the quintessential Honda Classic leaderboard.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, you had the big dogs and Brooks and Fowler there down the stretch. Mitchell won, the Bermuda guy. But yeah, pretty much all those guys you just mentioned who you would expect to see at a course like this popped up. You know, you had Furyk, you had Sergio, you had Horschel, you had Michael Thompson, who you mentioned, all those sorts of guys who play well on these types of tracks. And I think you're going to see more of that this week. I haven't looked too much at the weather, but, you know, I live here, so I don't have to. But it's going to be a little bit cooler this 60s. Weekend.
Yeah, 50s in the morning. That's cold for golf.
And we've gotten rain, quite a bit of rain. So it's going to be soft, which means I think you could see more birdies. However, I think the rough is going to be up. So I'm going to probably emphasize accuracy a little bit more than normal. And I'm going to emphasize birdie rate a little bit more, because I do think you're going to get some guys making 20-plus birdies here this week.
Mike's notes, Mike Miller at Smart Golf Bets. Southeast Florida's 80 miles north of Miami. He should have, but how far is it north of you?
About 18 miles.
Just south of Jupiter. Tom and George Fazio, 1981 design, toughened by Jack Nicklaus. They call, Ryan, the last three holes of this course the bear trap.
I did not know that.
We should have an over under prop bet on the bear trap mentions from NBC this week. Thousands. Watery, sometimes windy, strategic par 70. I love par 70 courses. 7,100 yards. Average width of Bermuda fairways. Actually, kind of narrow. Thick, gnarly rough, only 2 inches, but tough. 67 bunkers. I said 70. Fuck. Elevated, contoured, big, 7,000 square foot, fastish Bermuda greens. Water and play on 15 holes. 15. Historically, we thought that Koepka really likes to find the water. Maybe he's changed that about his game.
No, he hasn't.
But plenty in contention here of taking a bath in the second nine. Greens and right, wind management, yes. Bermuda putting, all key performances. Requirements. Also ranks top 10 on PGA Tour for toughness. Brutal finish via Jack Nicklaus's redesign. Holes 15 through 17 are now known as the bear trap. Excuse me, 15 through 17. 18th of par 5, which is also a tough hole.
It's a great par 5. If it's downwind, it's reachable. If it's not, it's a tough tee ball, tough layup, tough third shot. So,
plus, if you put it in the bunker, back left bunker, with the Sunday pin position, like Lucas Glover did last year, also in contention.
Yeah.
Albeit, no, he made that.
A 20-footer for par.
Right.
Yeah.
I like Glover this week.
I had Glover last year, so yeah, that was a fun one, but Keith Mitchell ruined that.
Yeah, so the stats, I'm with you. Heavy on approach. This is Chris Durrell's sheets at Jaeger_bombs8. six. One of them. Sure. He's a bearded guy. He looks terrifying. Approach, tee to green, scrambling, sand saves, at the green, Bermuda putting. This list for my top 10 model. Do you have a model?
Is that a capital list or a lowercase list?
List is not on the model list.
I do have a model. Yes. Hit I don't it. Like it.
I hate it.
Are we just doing a stats model?
Just a stats model first.
All right. And actually, list is number 10. I'll go backwards from 10. Sure. Luke List, number 10. Mm-hmm. M. Neiman. Vegas. English. Redman. Connors. EVR. Griot. Hovland. How's that for terrible?
We have one player in common. Is that a recent form list or full year form?
That is more recent form. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Maybe you should do that week to week, and I'll do the full year form. Backwards from 10. Gary Woodland, Cameron Percy, Brian Harman, Justin Rose, Cameron Tringale, Brooks Koepka, Harris English. This top three is going to blow your mind. Bud Cauley, Russell Knox, Tom Hoagie. Tom Hoagie is number one on the Model TM list.
Yeah, I just sorted mine for the year, and it's better, but Connors is number one, which is a problem.
Yeah, that's not going to work out.
No.
Bets-wise, I think that we agree on three. K.H. Lee, you can find him, what, 80, 100?
Yeah, 100 to 1. Mm-hmm.
List, same thing, 80 to 100. Wyndham Clark, he was 80. Now he's 66 because these fools are hammering him. And then also Vijay Singh. Now, Vijay Singh, he has played here twice in the last 4 or 5 years. He's finished sixth both instances, including last year, which he almost won. I don't understand why he's the longest priced person on the board to win almost at 40,000 plus 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then a top 10 is plus 5,000, which probably will make his top 20, what, 1,600?
Yeah, probably maybe. 20. Yeah, I'm somewhere between 15 and 20 to 1. Yeah, I think that's the bet. I mean, he has finished sixth here twice in a row. I mean, 1 year older is still 1 year older, but I think it's a much better chance than 16 to 1 of him being a top 20 here. I could definitely get behind that.
No one pays more attention to fitness at his age and the care of his career than Vijay Singh.
Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned a few good names. I have a couple more. I think this event and this field, about as wide open as they get. Yes. I can make arguments for, you know, I like Woodland, I like Horschel, I like On, but I'm never betting them at those numbers. So basically, no. I went right to 80 to 1. And I just threw darts there. So from 80 to 1 up, I took Westwood, 80 to 1. List, mm-hmm. 80 to 1. Vegas, 80 to 1. Matt Neesmith, playing awesome, 90 to 1. K.H. Lee, you mentioned, 100 to 1. Yep. And then the lead pipe humpback whale lock of the week per Tim Frank is Sam Burns at 110 to 1.
Yeah. The Tringale 100 to 1.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see it. I mean, either way, even if you get one of these big dogs winning, I think you're going to see 3, 4, 5 of these, you know, triple-digit guys in the top 10 come Sunday. And the way this course is and how difficult it can play with the win, like, any of them can win.
This is tough. I mean, it's not a huge – I don't understand, and I love Tommy Fleetwood, but I do not understand his price on DraftKings, and I do not understand his price as the shortest price in this field.
No, it's crazy.
It's just not – he's great off the tee. He's not a great iron player. He's a average to maybe slightly above average putter.
Yeah, part of it – I mean, he didn't even play well last week. I think the biggest thing is just that – I mean, one, the field is weak, But the next three guys who would be the favorite here, Brooke, Rose, and Fowler, they're all playing pretty badly. So the books have to make somebody the favorite, so they just kind of lump them all together. Rose drifted a bit, but they basically have Fleetwood, Brooks, and Fowler all about the same.
Rose 25-1 is crazy for this field considering his history here.
Yeah, he's just lost. He's just all over the place.
The course history for the five guys I thought had the best course history, and this is subjective, but Fowler, Rose, Horschel, who will be popular, Lee Westwood years ago, but still good. And then I said Vijay Singh. I mean, he's had three top tens in four starts, I think.
Yeah, he's definitely been good here. I think people are going to forget about Lee Westwood, and I don't know if that's just because he doesn't really play here anymore. Or, you know, he was pretty mediocre last week, but he was like 20th in Mexico. He won Abu Dhabi, which was a very, very strong field in Europe about a month ago. And yes, he had a couple bad starts after that. But like, do you think Lee Westwood cared about going to Dubai or to where else were they in Saudi Arabia after winning? No, not at all. And this is a course that fits him very well. So big fan of Westwood this week. And I think the other guy right there who I am definitely going to lose money on is Harris English. He is great wind player, great short game, great Bermuda guy. His biggest weakness overall for the last, I don't know, 8-10 years he's been out here was his off the tee game that he's long but inaccurate. And last year, as he got more consistent, he seemed to fix that. He's hitting a lot more fairways than he ever has. And that's the kind of guy who can get hot on a course like this and play well. So I like Harris English a lot.
Three people, if you ask me to, we can name virtually every golfer almost on any tour and possibly even describe their game, especially on the PGA Tour.
Yep.
Three guys I can never play, will never play, and if you ask me to describe their games, I still can't, are Hudson Swafford, Harris English, and Nick Watney. I can't after all these years.
Well, Swafford is easy. Swafford is basically Lucas Glover light. But the other two, yeah, Watney, who knows? He used to be a bomber, not a bomber anymore. And then English, yeah, he's an aberration.
What is Harris English?
He's got a great short game, that's for sure. But yeah, he was always erring off the tee, and you know he got into a lot of trouble. What is your unbiased take on Berger this week?
You know, I said last night, predictably, I said this is the team I want if I could price it out right. Brooks, Fowler, Berger, Clark, List, Michael Thompson. I was pretty close on Thompson. He was 60, I said 64. I was exactly right on Fowler and Koepka. I was way off on the list.
Yeah.
Way off on Berger, like by 10,000. I like Berger at about 80 to 83 tops. Sorry, 8,000 to 8,300 tops on DraftKings. 9,000 range, he's a guy who'll disappoint you.
Yeah, and like people, I mean, he's obviously local. They have that connection. He lost in the playoff here in 2015, and people just hold on to that. And I mean, what happened the last 4 years he's been here, he went missed cut 29-36. Like,
correct.
Been very, very mediocre for a guy. Now, he is coming in very, very good form. But yeah, he's what, 8,900, 9,200, and he's going to be, you know, 15-20+% owned. Like, hard pass on that.
If you overpay for a guy that has, you know, I mean, you're going to overpay for someone who is just going to let you down. This is a anyone can win type course. And so pick someone who is really, really safe on top, like a Ricky Fowler. His short game and his putting is just so good. I would find it hard to believe that he would miss a cut. But like a Charles Howell or a Tommy Fleetwood or a Gary Woodland, I mean, or Daniel Berger, you're just in a, even a Sungjae Im, I know a lot of people love him, but he hasn't been the same Sungjae Im over the last 7 weeks.
I will say he is notoriously better when he gets back on Bermuda than Poa and Bent and stuff like that. So if there's a week to get a low owned Im,
I don't think he'll be low owned, Chief. I've heard so many people talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, they should. He's, you know, he's very, very talented. I could see him playing well this week.
Charles Schwartzel wins.
Eesh. All right, let's go to Oman, the real event, the main event.
Yes, let's go to Oman. All right, so Oman, I can't believe it's a year past since our last tournament with Kitayama winning over Campayo, which... Campayo, had he won at that point last year?
No, because he won in Morocco.
He was finishing second every week.
Yeah, I think he won Morocco or something afterwards, a couple weeks after.
Right. And now he is, I mean, his form is not great, but he's got a second and fourth year.
Yeah.
Well, Oman, from what I remember, it's a Greg Norman design. It's long. It's a par 70. It's not long, but it's 7,400 yards, par 72. This is from Mike's notes, but It's huge greens. The wind was crazy at one point. It's right on the ocean, and I mean, it's just going to be like Kitayama is a guy who can score a ton, but even Thomas Peters last year was in it. It's just going to be a good long hitter who can putt and play in windy conditions. The course, though, I mean, what was the winning score last year? Low?
Yeah, I think it was like minus eight or something.
Oh, was it?
Or minus seven. Minus seven, actually.
The final round was crazy. Sordé was up there. Kipaya was up there. JB Hansen, remember him? He was leading for a while.
Yeah, we'll be back on that one this week.
But this field, I mean, to me, Thomas Peters, obviously, he'll be in the top 10. Can he win every week? You know, we can say that. Minwoo Lee, I mean, he missed the cut here last year, but it seems like a course that with his short game that he could do really well on. Campayo, I don't know what his price is right now, but his form is terrible. He's finished second and fourth here in previous years. Describe what Campayo does well. That's 66-1.
Putting.
Yeah.
That's about it. He was, I mean, even when he was playing well, he was losing strokes tee to green. He was losing strokes ball striking, but, I mean, gaining 2-3 strokes per event putting. That's obviously gone, and the ball striking hasn't gotten better. So that's why you've seen him kind of be terrible for the last 9 months.
Let me tell you who's going to win, though. Ross Fisher.
Yeah, that's your guy.
Ross, huh?
Yeah, that's your guy. I know.
Yeah, he hits it an absolute mile and is a great putter. I mean, he's basically what? Cameron Champ?
Yeah, I'm just Wyndham looking Clark? Back at his. Yeah, I'm just looking back at Fisher's form and I see six miscut six, and then I realize when I was all in on him.
yes, of course.
Yeah, right in the middle there. No, I could definitely see that. I think, like you mentioned, I think there's a lot of ways to attack this golf course. I do think being able to hit it far is an advantage. There's not a lot of trouble. The fairways are wide, and I mean, even if you miss, like there is some water, but there's a lot of waste and sand areas, which are, you know, fine for these guys. But the greens are big, and I think that's going to mean one of two things. Number one, if you're a good iron player and you can get it close to these holes, you're going to make a lot of birdies. I also think you're going to see a lot of three putts from those who don't. So this is probably a week where I'm going to weigh distance, but also weigh putting a little bit.
Sordé?
Yes.
Place that bet. And Dubuisson?
Yeah, I like the French connection this week too. Anyone from France or from Belgium is probably going to be on my card. I did bet Peters in a couple doubles. I don't want to bet him outright at 12-1 or 11-1, whatever he is, but I do think he is by far the class of this field. he is so overdue for a win, and he's been doing it the right way. Like, he's been the number one ball striker in Europe for about the last half year. And this field is just weak enough that I think he should win. You mentioned Sorde. I've already bet that. I'm a big fan of him. Who else? George Castilla. Yeah, George Castilla and Benjamin Hebert, exactly. Who played great last week. Iron play was stellar in Mexico.
Was really good in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit shocking because the rest of the game was not good, but the irons were great. And he's played really, really well here over the years. He finished 18th last year, 9th the year before. And then George Katsaya missed the cut last year, but his form has been really good the last 2 weeks. Now, he's been playing in terrible fields. He got married, so basically got married and then played well a couple weeks in a row in weak fields. So we'll see how he does making this jump, but I think this is the type of course where he can excel.
No, Katsaya. Absolutely not. Take him off your card. I'm telling you. What about Adri Arnaus?
Yeah.
Have we forgotten about him?
No, I think, again, you know, he'll play okay. I've been a little worried about his upside. You know, we've seen him, you know, he's finished 15th, 20th, 30th, 40th, but I just haven't seen that he's ready to win yet. And nope. At the price that he is, like 25 to 1 or something, 28 to 1, he's got to win.
33.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pass.
Justin Harding, 66 to 1.
There's a cluster down there in that range. Harding is one of them. Your guy, Darren Fickart, who I think you had last week.
Fickart, yes.
He's down there. Very interesting.
You can't finish sixth in that tournament last week and then go win the Amman Open. You just can't. Same with Katsaya, finished eighth.
Yeah, I just think, there's a lot of interesting names there. Our guy, Matthew Pavon, who always seems to show up in these kinds of events. You just never know if he's going to play well, but he just does. but he never wins, so that's another one. Alexander LeVay, a perfect example of a guy who I think is very underpriced this week, and you know how hot he can get. He finished fourth here in 2018, so I just think there's a lot of options if you either want to play DraftKings or if you just want to bet, you know, five long shots.
Gary Ayer, I know you're looking.
Oh, yes. He's an off-the-tee specialist. I'm a big fan of him.
Is he a better ball striker than world-class best iron player Alexander Bjork?
Do you know who has been sneaky playing better? Alexander Bjork. he fell off the face of the earth last year, and he's now made three or four cuts in a row. And, you know, he had a bad finish and then a 45th and then a 27th. Likes this course. He's in. For DraftKings, not for betting.
All right. My
one and one?
Fisher Clark or Sorde Clark?
Fisher Clark. Sorde Clark.
This is terrible. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I mean, I'm pretty lame, but I mean, the doubles that I did were Peters with Horschel and Woodland. So I guess I'll go Peters Woodland and be very lame. If I'm not taking chalk, I'm taking Hebert. And I am taking Lee Westwood.
20 grand on Clark and Fisher, as I said last night, is going to pay $60 million. So back me at 1.77.
Yeah, you can start your own Premier Golf League with that.
See you, Ryan.
See you, buddy.
Have fun this week.
I appreciate it.
In the close, quickly, I was late on asking for questions. I'll answer one. Streelman's wife. At Streelman's favorite outside 100-to-1 Masters picks. Not many, but if you had to, Grace, Hatton, maybe JB Holmes. He's playing really well. Maybe Ao Tong Lee, but probably not. I wanted to tell this story because it's so good, and maybe there's some parallels to the PGL. And whether or not players, maybe not tour players now, but players in the future would decide, listen, I'm a good amateur, or I'm playing the Korn Ferry Tour. Do I make the decision to jump to the PGL, or do I go the traditional route and just try to earn my stripes in the PGA? the tour that vaults you to stardom, guaranteed, if you do well. And I was talking to E. Patterson about this, Eric Patterson, and I thought, oh, this is a good story to tell. 25, 30 years ago now, in that range, David Letterman on his show on CBS and his broadcast production company, Worldwide Pants, were looking to do a new sitcom. And they were looking to cast the lead of the sitcom. And so, and I forget where I heard this story, so some of the details, shockingly, may not be completely precise. But generally, I think this is how the story went. So Letterman, you know, Worldwide Pants, gigantic production company, wanted to do a sitcom. Jeff Ross, who you know being one of the best roasting comedians ever, the celebrity roasts, just the speed at which he reacts with comedy is just almost second to none. He killed it in a set on Letterman. Killed it. Destroyed it. I think Letterman said it was one of the best sets ever for a comedian on his show. After the show, they pulled Jeff Ross up to Letterman's office. Letterman says, "We want to create a sitcom, and I want you. I want you, Jeff Ross, to be the lead for that sitcom." Jeff Ross says, "I love it. Let me take some time to think about it." At the same time, the production company for Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, which at the time Seinfeld was over the sun in terms of how huge it was, peak Seinfeld, they saw the set. They call Jeff Ross's people. They say, "Jeff, we want to do something with you. We don't have a show in mind right now, but we want you." So they signed him. Or we want to sign him to a development deal. So Jeff Ross had the choice of Letterman Worldwide Pants or Hotter Than the Sun, Seinfeld, Larry David. He goes with Seinfeld, Larry David. So Letterman's company is stuck without a lead for the show that they want to create. Over the next week or couple of weeks, the next comedian that comes on Letterman is who? Ray Romano. Kills it. Maybe not as good as Jeff Ross, but kills it. Invites him up to the office. They've lost Jeff Ross to Seinfeld, Larry David. Letterman says, "We want you for a sitcom." Romano says, "I'm in." What does that become? Everybody Loves Raymond. Where did Jeff Ross go? Celebrity Roasts. Good career, but not Everyone Loves Raymond money. That guy's making $1 billion. And it's funny that you can make these gigantic decisions at these forks in the road in your career, because I've had to make them and I've chosen wrong in the past. I've got to make one here soon. But the future of the PGL depends on star players. A lot of them I still believe won't go, but some on the fringe of possibly stardom on the PGA or jumping to money on the PGL will have to make that decision. Do I go with what I know is going to be good, a show that's in development and they want me? Or do I go with what seems, you know, expensive, attractive, and maybe a little ill-defined? So I just wanted to share that story because it's a hell of a story. Anyway, Fisher Clement, Fisher. I couldn't even get that word. Clement Sorde, Ross Fisher. I like Wyndham Clark, Ricky, Russell Henley, good iron player. Josh Teeter, deep. Vijay Singh, top 20. I'll start narrowing this down by Wednesday. But you get your top 20 sing bets in there with a whole cast of characters in Oman, and you're going to have a good week. 16-1 for a top 20 for Vijay Singh. Has he ever finished worse than sixth? Yes. Have a good week.